This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. A week after the terrorist attack on the U.S., we continue to try to come to some understanding of what has happened and its impact. In this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll look at the impact of the tragedy on the Islamic community of Champaign-Urbana. We'll also examine the dilemmas facing people of faith in the wake of last week's attacks. Four guests join me in the studio this afternoon. Dr. Mujahid El-Fayyad is the imam, the pastor, of the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center in Urbana. Raza Siddiqui is a student at the University of Illinois and a member of the Muslim Student Association. Muhammad Abdullah is a 40-year resident of Champaign-Urbana and a member of the mosque. And the Reverend Steve Shoemaker, he is the executive director of the University YMCA. He also hosts the AM 580 program Keeping the Faith, which airs at 5 p.m. on Sunday evenings here on AM 580. Listeners, I invite you to join our discussion with your questions and comments, your reflections. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you
very much.
First of all, my first question to our spiritual leaders here in the studio this afternoon, Reverend Steve Shoemaker and the Imam, has the spiritual community of Champaign-Urbana come together to support one another?
I think we've seen some very good examples of that, Celeste. Last Friday, for example, at the mosque, at the invitation of the Imam, local religious leaders were called together, and there was a crowd of, over a couple hundred, I'd say. There was a panel representing people of different faiths, and I was privileged to be one of the people on that panel. And the people in the mosque were very open and accepting and welcoming of people of different faiths.
Well, on the first day of the attack, Most of the calls that we received from people in Champaign-Urbana was from people and spiritual leaders. Actually, we received so many calls from churches, from priests and people working at the churches. Most of the calls was not only to support, but also they pledged some kind of help because they realized that during these circumstances, there may be a kind of misunderstanding of the overall situation. They offered safe houses. They offered help. They offered to provide rights for people. They were very supportive. And as our friend Mr. Shoemaker mentioned, that we had congregational prayer, a special prayer for the victims on the same day, and people from different faiths, I would like to concentrate on this, from different faiths, came and joined us in our prayer, and also they came to our discussion on Friday, and they will be coming for the events that we are going to announce maybe next week even.
Okay. And maybe do you have those events set up or some of them? Maybe we could, at some point in the program, we could.
Well, the one which is coming actually very soon is on Sunday. We'll be having an open house on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We'll have also another special prayer for the victims. And also we'll have a kind of discussion with different people from different faith and different understanding. And this will be for 2 hours, from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hmm. We've heard reports of harassment and violence directed at Muslims. We've also heard, as you mentioned, Imam, stories of kindnesses and support. What's been the experience of the Islamic community in Central Illinois? You mentioned the kindnesses. Have there been instances of harassment, of trouble? And let's direct this question to Muhammad Abdullah and to Raza Siddiqui. Muhammad?
Well, overall, we have not experienced anything of any significant kind of harassments or things like that. maybe some offhanded comments or something, but nothing significant in terms of harassment or attacks, no attacks at all, any kind of violence like that in this community.
Mm-hmm. Raza, your experience?
I would have to echo and say we had the same experience there. This community has been real good in extending a helping hand and to helping the Muslim students out. I haven't personally experienced anything. As Muhammad said, there have been off-color remarks, but nothing significant.
Have the members of the community been advised to take precautions?
Well, in our mosque, actually, we got people together on the same day, and we asked them to be cautious. And this is something that could be done for any kind of circumstances sometimes. It could be done just as a measure of security for the building and for people who are coming to prayers. But people have confidence in this community, really, in the Champaign-Urbana community. And on the first day, we called the police. Actually, somebody else called the police for us. And this is really something that we are very grateful for. And after that, we even asked the police to go back and serve other places because we don't have anything to be scared of. The whole community was very cooperative. And also, we got, as I said, the many calls from people who volunteered to come to us and also secure our place.
Mm. People with children have had a lot of tough questions to answer over the last week, and I imagine that for Muslims there have been questions that parents who are not Muslim have not had to try to answer. Has that been the case, and how are the children doing?
Well, some of the children of our community were a little bit scared because this is for them it's the first experience. Some of them went to school normally. My son went to school on the same day, and he never asked me a question, what to do. And I never told him what to do because I have that confidence, as I said. But people, and especially on the first and the second day, did not show up even in our prayers. Some of the families were a little bit hesitated to come to the masjid. But we gave them the right advice, what to do, to call the police or to call the masjid, to call some of the volunteers who supported us. And things are coming back to normal.
There have been concerns raised about challenges to our freedoms as we try to make ourselves safe. Is the Islamic Center concerned about that issue? Is the center politically active in the area of civil rights?
Well, if we go to the background of the why people are really coming to the United States to start with. They are coming to the United States for freedom. When I came to this country, the only thing that I had in my mind that I could go to the United States, I can really worship the way I want to worship, act within the framework of the law in this country. This is a big concern, actually, for people if they will be taken, if their freedom will be taken by one way or another, they are really a little bit concerned. But at the meantime, justice is justice. I mean, these people, these criminals, have to be brought to justice, and whatever could be done to track them up, to see what they are doing, I think this is also a kind of legitimate right.
Muhammad?
And from a historical perspective, I think Muslims just consider the late 70s or early 80s. If an attack of this magnitude had happened late 70s, early 80s, I think the climate for Muslims would have been much different than what we have now. Just consider the Iran situation when the hostages were taken and the climate at that particular time. There's a lot of work has been done between various faith communities to improve the dialogue between Muslims, Christians, and Jews. And over the past 20 years, that kind of interfaith dialogue, that kind of cooperation, that kind of understanding, building of understanding, has really helped the climate for Muslims with regard to the response when there's a tendency to label Muslims as being part of the problem, the terrorist problem. And also, Muslims overall have become more conscious of, more aware of the political, the need to become politically involved. So for some areas, some larger cities in some areas in the nation, there are communities, Muslim communities, that are very actively involved in political, various areas of politics. It's my opinion that, you know, that may have some backlash, that maybe there may be some backlash in terms of this political involvement, as to what the, you know, what the course will be, how this will play out. It's difficult to say right now, but those communities that have been very active politically will obviously have some kind of concerns, I think.
Steve?
I might add to that that for American Christians, Christianity is the largest of the world religions, with about 1.7 billion people who are members around the world. But Islam is second largest, with, I forget, maybe 1.2 billion, something like that. But in this country, we've been very isolated for many years from Muslims, and it's only been in the last 30 years that there's been a very large population in the United States of Muslims. And the fact that a town such as Champaign would have a mosque is relatively new. For many years, the Muslims in this community worshipped on Fridays for their Friday prayers in other spaces. But now there's a large enough congregation that they even have their own imam now. And so I think with that increase in population, there's been the opportunity for people to have Muslims as, for Christians in this country and Jews, to have Muslims as neighbors, to have them as fellow workers. And with that has come an increased understanding and acceptance. And the realization, I think, also that that there are extremists within all world religions, and Islam is not alone in that.
Yeah. Religion has been used for good and evil. I mean, I want to ask about Islamic law that I've read recently. I've been doing a lot of reading on these subjects. Islamic law, terrorism is viewed as cowardice and a sin punishable by death. Can you tell us more about perhaps what the Quran has to say about terrorism, and is the Quran the same as Islamic law?
Well, in the Quran, our book, these verses are so many, and the Quran is repeating even the teaching of the people before Muslims, the Jews and the Christians, that whatever applies on them applies on Muslims, and the Quran says, whoever killed an innocent person is just like killing the whole humanity. And whoever saves a soul of, by the way, a soul, it's not really only for human beings, but for everything, animals, plants, whatever, is as saving the whole humanity. And even the tradition, what we call the tradition and the saying of our prophet, is emphasizing on that, bringing justice to the world, bringing justice to individuals, condemning any kind of killing without reason. And he and the Islamic law has put reasons. Reasons are there, and they are very clear, actually, to every Muslim who is following Islam. All of this teaching is saying that killing innocent people who are not really involved directly in a kind of declared war against Muslims, is a crime. And it is a big sin, and they should be taken to court, and there is no punishment for that killing. Is only killing also. I mean, the one who kills without reason should be killed. This is very clear, actually. I mentioned in the for our community people, so many quoted so many verses from the Quran, and it's really very clear to every Muslim that this is the punishment, and there is no reason whatsoever to kill any innocent. And innocent, by the way, is the one who is not really involved and the one who doesn't know what's really going on, just like those people who were killed in a building and they were burned there without any reason. If there is a reason, the reason should be discussed in some other ways, not through the way of killing.
Yeah. Steve, you want to share a perspective from your faith?
Well, unfortunately, the Bible is as big a book and as difficult to interpret as the Quran. And in Christianity, there are Christians who read different parts of the Bible and interpret them very differently. For example, right now in the current debate as to what's an appropriate way to respond to the violence, some Christians who are pacifists who read the Bible a certain way and who follow certain Christian traditions say that no violent response is legitimate. Other Christians reading the same book, coming from very similar Christian traditions, think that it's all right to respond violently within certain limits. The traditional just war theory that if you don't attack civilians and if your response is only in self-defense and if it's limited, then you can respond even with violence if that's necessary. And then, of course, you have other Christians who say, do whatever is necessary to stop the attacker. So you have all those responses possible and vocally spoken of from Christianity. And we hear other people quoting different parts of the Quran. Now, I'm not an expert in the Quran at all, but I know some people quote different parts and apparently come to different conclusions, different Muslims.
Well, the understanding of the Quran people need to understand the interpretation of the Quran. There is no doubt about that. Anybody can really quote from the Quran and say that this is the thing. People cannot really bring an evidence from the Quran unless they support that from the explanation and the interpretation of our Prophet, because the job of our Prophet is to explain the Quran. The Quran cannot be interpreted directly or cannot be explained by people. Even myself, I cannot really say that this verse of the Quran says this and that. So that's why we usually support the verses of the Quran with the saying of our Prophet. And I can really quote so many saying right now. One of the sayings says that whoever is killing a person without any reason, he will never smell the nice smell of paradise. What does it mean? Innocent. There is no doubt that people could really identify who is innocent. I cannot really imagine that people in the World Trade Center building they were carrying guns and they were trying to kill people. I think the interpretation and definition of innocent is quite clear, and there are so many sayings that support this conclusions.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're talking this afternoon about the impact of the tragedy of last week, the attack on the U.S., on the Islamic community of Champaign-Urbana. And we're also talking about the dilemmas facing people of faith in the wake of last week's attacks. Listeners, your comments and questions are welcome if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We have four guests with us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Dr. Mujahed Al-Fayyad is the Imam of the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center in Urbana. Also with us, Raza Siddiqui. He is a student at the University of Illinois and a member of the Muslim Student Association. Muhammad Abdullah. He is a 40-year resident of Champaign-Urbana and affiliated with the mosque. Also with us, the Reverend Steve Shoemaker. He's the executive director of the University YMCA, and he hosts the program Keeping the Faith, which airs here on AM 580 at 5 p.m. on Sunday evening. What are your thoughts about the words that we have heard and seen in bold letters in headlines, war, and dead or alive that we've seen, we've heard over the past week?
Well, for one, I'm very frightened at the possibility of overreaction. Now, some people would say with 4,000 or 5,000 people killed, how can there even be an overreaction? But I think there can be. I think with the military power of the United States, that it would be very possible if the wrong decisions are made, that our government could become as guilty as the people who attacked our country in terms of killing innocent civilians in other parts of the world. So I'm scared. It frightens me with the possibilities we have, particularly with things like biological weapons as possibilities. In addition, with people who may feel cornered, or people who may feel that's their last option. I think we all have a right to be frightened.
Mohammed?
I think that the action that is taken after this incident with regard to our government and the administration, what course of action that's taken now will, in my opinion, sort of define the character of the 21st century. I think we can end up defining the character of the 21st century in such a way that we will all be living in fear for a large part of this century. Or we can define the character of this century by forming alliances, building coalitions, and looking at terrorism as a worldwide problem that has to be dealt with not only by our country but by the nations at large. A threat to civilization, a threat to the peace and prosperity of this planet. And if we don't build coalitions and form alliances and try to go it alone or the Rambo kind of approach, I think we can increase hostilities and put ourselves in real peril in this century.
Raza, could I get you to share your thoughts?
Well, it's only natural to feel angry at what has happened, but I think it's important to realize that we not be blinded by the anger we're feeling, that we take the time to realize what happened and why it happened. It's important not to jump to any conclusions, which I think we have a tendency to do whenever we face a disaster such as this. It's important to realize what evidence do we have that specifically says a certain group, a certain individual is responsible for the acts. And I think after we determine that and when we have solid evidence, I think the next important question to ask ourselves is, why did this happen? I think the best way to get at the root of the problem and to ensure that something like this does not happen again is to realize what, in fact, would trigger something in someone to commit an act like this. And I think that's what the government has to focus on, is figuring out why this happened before we jump into an all-out war, which is not well planned because of the fact that without knowing exactly what caused it, there's no way to tell if it'll continue afterwards.
Well, this is Mujahid again. I think if the war is a war against terrorism, there's no doubt that we all agree about it. But how we do that war? Is it a kind of revenge of what had happened? And also, is it going to tackle those people who are responsible for this particular incident, or is to deal with the terrorist problems everywhere? To my understanding as a Muslim, that oppression anywhere on earth is a kind of terrorism also. People are oppressed everywhere in the world. People are really suffering from different problems, poverty, lack of resources, lack of medicine sometimes, everywhere in Africa, in Asia. And if you go to the Middle East, there is also a problem there in the Middle East that has to be addressed by people, by government, and by people of the whole world, and also the United States. The sometimes people say that we are with war, when we are with war against terrorism. and also, but how to do it? How to address it? And is it by direct war? Is it by attacking this country or that country? Definitely, we as Muslim, we don't really accept any kind of war against any human being on earth, not only Muslims. If this attack is going to be on some other people other than Muslims, we don't really accept it.
Raza mentioned anger, and that's an emotion that can be good, can be put to good use. But how does one keep it channeled in a positive manner, keep it from becoming hate? And I wonder, as religious folks, how do you counsel your congregants on that issue, Steve?
One of the things that a real problem is analyzing. You mentioned good and bad those issues. One of the problems, I think, is that we often forget about is apathy. And as the imam was saying, almost everybody agrees, okay, it's good to love, it's bad to hate. But we often forget that if we're not concerned about those who are oppressed, if we're not concerned about those who are starving or ill, when there's medicine available, I think that can be even worse than hate. At least in the Christian tradition, one of the most important stories Jesus ever told was about the Good Samaritan. And in that story, the emphasis was that it was the religious leaders who went on about their business and ignored the person in the ditch, who ignored the person who'd been hurt, who'd been robbed, that were doing the most evil. They were being apathetic. They didn't hate this person, they just ignored him. And I think that's one of the major problems that particularly people in America and maybe in Northern Europe face. It's so easy to live a life of privilege mm-hmm. and pleasure and just ignore the pain of the world. And then when various expressions of that pain get expressed, sometimes it's violent, and then we pay attention.
Let's talk with a listener in the Chicago area on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello. I've been enjoying the program, and I want to congratulate the Champaign-Urbana community for handling this so wisely. I have seen for a long time that our press and our government has a strong bias in the Middle East that is not balanced. But I did want to comment on the student's remark that we should look for the reason why this happened. In my opinion, there is no justification, no reason that allows the incident that happened last Tuesday. He may not have just expressed it the way it sounded to me, but if it was reversed and the U.S. did it to somebody, there would be no justification, and there is no justification for any human being to take the lives of 5,000 innocent people. So thank you very much.
Okay. I think the imam would like to respond.
Well, we are almost saying the same thing, that there is no reason whatsoever to do this kind of barbaric act. There's no reason. But if we assume that some people from the Middle East or some Muslims or Arabs were behind this, we would say that, okay, go ahead and we condemn this, we bring these people to justice, but at the same time, we would ask this question, why these people did that? If we assume that this was done by people from Africa or from South America or from some other, okay, we need to go ahead and investigate why this was done. Of course, we condemn this. We were so angry about it, and there is no reason to kill, as we said, innocent people. But always a human being, a smart and intelligent person is usually asking himself why these people are doing this. And if there are some reasons, we go ahead and address these reasons. And if there is no reason, of course, we bring them to justice. And if we bring 5 or 10 people to justice without looking at the reasons, I think this is not really a smart way to do it.
Let's talk with another listener on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Yes. My comment is along the same lines, that there are many explanations offered for this act or for Arab dissatisfactions. I mean, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or the way we're treating Iraqi by blockading it, or the fact that we have American bases in Saudi Arabia, which is offensive to be near the holy sites that bin Laden. I mean, there are a lot of the dissatisfaction of Arabs and Muslim peoples not participating in the advances of Western civilization, not being prosperous. But no matter, those are all real issues, and those are all significant issues, and those are in a sense getting at, you know, possible causes. But in a sense, I agree with the last caller. There's no way to go from those causes to killing 5,000 innocent people, and that's not the way to address those kinds of problems. And this has a little bit of of not taking responsibility for your own situation, but blaming it on others. Anyway, that's my comment.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Mohammed Abdullah?
Yeah, I think there's perhaps another way of defining looking for the reasons behind this unjust and horrible attack. And that's to say that in the history of religion, we've had periods where tremendous evils have been done in the name of religion. And we're not talking exclusively about Islam. We're talking about religion in general. So I think a burden that's on those in the faith community has to do with how the teachings are being interpreted and how those teachings are being internalized by individuals who feel oppressed, who are unjustly treated by other nations, who feel they're unjustly treated by other nations. And what we mean when we say in the Quran, in the cause of Allah. So we do have in religion the idea of a just war and a war fighting in the name of God. If that idea is wrongly interpreted, and that idea is internalized by people who feel that their oppression is unbearable, then in the name of religion, we will have horrible attacks like we've had this past week, and individuals will feel justified in what they're doing. And I think that's an issue that has to be addressed in terms of reason. Is that a legitimate reason? Is there support for that? And I think in a lot of ways religious teachers and leaders have failed to clarify what is a just approach, a just war.
Steve?
And those two sides of religion that were just mentioned, the side that can lead to horror and violence and war, or the side that can lead to peace and reconciliation, are found in all the world religions. And we're fortunate on this campus that tomorrow one of the great experts on world religions, Martin Marty, will be speaking at 4 o'clock at Krannert in a free lecture talking about religion, the killer that also heals. He happens to be a Lutheran pastor himself, a scholar from University of Chicago, but he studied worldwide sort of fundamentalism in many different kinds of religions, Christianity and Islam and others. But he focuses in his book, and I'm sure he will in his lecture tomorrow, on those kind of issues.
Let's talk with another listener on the toll-free line in Downs. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm calling in reference to the last caller, and I would just like everyone to remember in this whole discussion that reasons and justifications are two different things. That we can look for reasons why someone did something and not be justifying what they did. And that's all. I just hope we can make that distinction so that we can understand the reasons without people immediately thinking that we're justifying what was done.
Hmm. Well, thanks for the call this afternoon. We're going to talk with another listener now on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I'd like just to make a quick comment about all this situation. All of this happened, not from one day to another. It's a consequence of many centuries of interaction between countries, peoples, and cultures. And unfortunately, we have this terrible act with so many deaths and terrible consequences. But maybe it's the time for all of us, cultures of all over the world, to think about the way we've been treating one another, sometimes even our own neighbors, because there are people who have been who are feeling right now mistreated, oppressed, for reasons that sometimes we ourselves don't understand because we are our perspective is different. So maybe it's a time for starting with religions or maybe people or communities to look and see how we are positioning ourselves in the world and treating one another and see if actually we are cooperating so that this is a global world where we are doing our best so that everybody lives the best possible way instead of just looking into our own selves and our prosperity. These are my comments.
Thanks for the call. Imam?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank the previous caller, actually, for what she said. I think we were all looking for the difference between justification and reasons. This is the thing that I liked, actually. We're talking about reasons, and all of us, I think no one of us was trying to prove and justify the attack. There's no justification for the attacks, of course. Well, we were talking about reasons, and we should really continue this discussion for the days to come, that what are the reasons behind this. And I would like just to remind also the listeners that the major part of this problem is a political part, is a political thing. Sometimes we are trying to blame religions, we are trying to blame people of these religions, but although this kind of conflict has a kind of religious background, but you know, this is also a political problem, and politicians and people who are really involved in the politics of the whole world should really be involved and try to seek reasons behind these attacks.
Let's talk with another listener on line two in Thomasboro. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'd like to continue on with that. And one of the things, obviously, what's happening is just beyond comprehension. But as we look at the things, just like what they were mentioning there, the reasons, we can look from the Western perspective or the perspective that we have in our nation. But what I would suggest is an attempt to understand what is happening and then with an objective or goal towards preventing this in the future, is to attempt to get within the mind or understand the mindset of the individuals that committed such, you know, the atrocities, not only in New York and Washington, but around the world. I think that's important because the future doesn't hold in retaliation or vengeance or an eye for an eye, but the future holds in looking at what are the actual consequences of political and military decisions, not only within the United States, but on the citizens of the world, and then an attempt to say, okay, if there were real consequences or if there are perceived consequences, what do we need to do to alleviate those such that that does not provide a reason for these individuals to commit these acts of horror? And at the same time, you know, we're looking at that, we need to understand that obviously, as has been mentioned over and over again, there's some that are just going to do it no matter what. So now that's just kind of a thought, and I was wondering what the panelists thought.
Okay.
Well, going back also to the same issue of justification, I was talking the other day with some people. They said that I was really preaching and telling people that this cannot be justified, And he reminded of one thing that he said that, do you think that the killing overseas could be justified? I said, no, it cannot be justified. So he said that, well, it's the same thing. I mean, terrorism cannot be justified everywhere, but there are reasons for that injustice. So this is really just to add to the point that we mentioned before.
Yeah. And a comment on the previous caller's comments. I think that we're in a situation where we're in a time period where there really is a technology that can help in terms of our having a mature understanding of the world's population. Most of the time, our media tends to give us 30-minute view of the world. It's impossible to see the world in 30 minutes. But we do have the technology to talk all around the world, to see all around the world, to understand people's cultures all around the world. We have the technology for that. And I think we're being denied that opportunity to really understand cultures and peoples and their mindset. And until we use the technology for understanding peoples and their concerns and what is disturbing their peace and cutting off their opportunity, we will be living on a planet that's going to continuously have these kinds of problems. And hopefully we can start understanding how to better use the technology that we have.
Steve or Raza, any final comments? We're going to have to wrap it up very, very soon.
I just agree with Muhammad that it is impossible for us to get a quick view of the world, and it is important that since we have the technology, since we have the ability, and hopefully since we all have the desire to get to know a little about each other, that we utilize this technology and that we do take the time to understand the political problems, the social problems going on, so we understand ourselves as Americans in a global environment, so we recognize that we aren't an isolated country.
That's where we're going to leave it, and I want to thank the four of you very much for joining us this afternoon. I also want to thank our listeners and our callers this afternoon. Our guests this afternoon have been Raza Siddiqui. He is a student at the University of Illinois and a member of the Muslim Student Association. Also with us this afternoon, Muhammad Abdullah, a longtime resident of Champaign-Urbana, and he is affiliated with the mosque in Urbana. Also with us this afternoon, the Reverend Steve Shoemaker, the Executive Director of the University YMCA and the host of the program Keeping the Faith here on AM 580 on Sunday evenings at 5. And also this afternoon, here with us in the studio, Dr. Mujahed Al-Fayyad, the Imam of the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center in Urbana. Again, our thanks to you four gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.